Hey, welcome to The Weekend. It's time for Group Chat, the place where everyone comes together to talk all things pop culture, whether it's music.
Yeah, Beyonce has 11 nominations.
I think that's aggressive.
including album of the year.
I am happy that she is getting some play.
Mm-hmm. Movies and TV.
In comedy, like, we had memes, we had GIFs, we had people being Rickrolled, we had That's What She Said, we had, you know, like, we had all that stuff. So I think it's also just
it's
where
like
we are in
part
time.
Part of the trend, yeah.
How do you know when to move on? How do you know when something's stale?
How long do we do Chuck Norris jokes for?
Or sports moments that have everyone talking.
If you're watching a television show and somebody's wearing a Bills jersey, like, they're going to notice that and zoom in on that Bills jersey and be like, I like this show, I like these characters. Somebody who doesn't really necessarily care about the Bills, or maybe they follow a different team, they're not going to see that, they're not going to have that same connection, because their perceptual ability is just, it's a different set of references.
Group Chat brings you all the pop culture action with sharp insight, fun debates, and a whole lot of laughter.
Coming up right after this.
Hello, and welcome to Group Chat. I'm your host, Bentley, and today I'm excited to welcome to the chat Idris Wajed, Buffalo-based artist, educator, entrepreneur, whose creative works span visual art, jewelry design, music, and community engagement. Idris is also a muralist, perhaps most recognized locally for his contribution as one of four artists on Freedom Wall Mural, and he is co-founder of the creative design agency Eat Off Art. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me.
Noah Falk, poet, culture worker, and the award-winning author of the poetry collections Exclusions and Snowmen Losing Weight, as well as several chapbooks, including the co-written collection Pre-Recorded Weather. Noah is also a literary director at Just Buffalo Literary Center and curates the Silo City Reading Series, a multimedia poetry event series inside a 120-foot-high, 100-year-old abandoned grain elevator. And I'm so happy to have back with us today Group Chat All-Star Dallas Taylor, poet, writer, mentor, actor, and director. When he isn't writing or competing in poetry slams, he is out photographing whatever will sit still long enough to take a photo, or working his day job as multimedia content editor at Buffalo Toronto Public Media. So welcome, everybody. I'm excited to talk to you all in this setting together. I know you each individually and all about you, but it's going to be fun to get everybody together. So the show is called Group Chat. So what are you talking about in your group chats? What's happening?
Mostly about the world, kind of. I wouldn't say the world is burning. I would say at least today it's like in an air fryer. Like it's burning in a sense that a lot of heat is getting concentrated in one place. It just happens to be the earth right now.
Yeah.
So it's not on fire yet, but it's close.
Close.
It's close.
Mm. Yeah, same as Dallas, just kind of considering the things that are going on, more so focused on what I can deal with and what I can handle and how I can contribute. That's my grounding point for myself. It's just like, those are the contingencies, as I tell myself. Like, people say, oh, how are you, Idris? I say, I'm great with contingencies. Because I am. I feel great. I think I'm grateful for a lot of things in my life, my family and career. And there are some contingencies.
Yeah.
You know?
Noah, how about you?
The group chat that comes to mind is I'm in a music group chat where we share new music or music that's like driving us.
Yeah.
I think that's one that I think I pay attention to most. We were talking about the musician Cameron Winter, who released a record, I think the beginning of this year, early last year, or end of last year, beginning of this year. And it's been kind of spinning on all of our, it's on our radar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we will be talking more about music, so great to have you here.
Yes.
So this coming Saturday, the last Saturday in June, did you know that National Mural Day is a thing? Look, see? Right up your alley, Idris.
That's wild.
Do you get a bonus or a trophy for that? Does anybody send you a cake?
Well, the answer to that is if they did, then I'd know about it. I'd be looking forward to Mural Day. Like, oh, absolutely.
Dallas, you're in charge of next National Mural Day to bring a cake.
Okay.
I'm on it. All right.
Yeah, buttercream.
Yes, only from Tops.
If you're listening now, Dallas is a cake connoisseur. He's a fan of cake, so he'll be in charge of that. So the day recognizes the power and beauty of murals and the artists who create them. I get the feeling, Idris, this is not why you create art, right? Just to have a day named after it.
I am so clueless on. I mean, really. I mean, considering I've been publicly recognized for doing murals since 2017, right?
Yeah.
and this is my first time hearing about this. Otherwise, I'd be sharing all of my artwork affectionately on Mural Day. Like, this is bizarre, but good. This is good news.
Now
good
you
news. Is this new?
Now you know.
Is it a new thing?
I mean, I feel like it has to be. This is my first time learning about it was this week.
But it wouldn't be. So. But it could have been around for some time, though.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. if I mean,
murals have been going on.
I mean, the AKG just celebrated the 10th year in it.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Itself, right?
Right.
So we're just catching on.
Yeah. That's what this show is about. We're educating. You mentioned the AKG. What are some pieces of public art in Buffalo that have stayed with you or maybe you visit?
For me personally, I'm always going to point to the Freedom Wall mm-hmm. because there was a lot of liberation for the Freedom Wall there in the community on several levels, like for the community, for myself. It was pivotal in my career, you know, mm-hmm. certainly mm-hmm. pivotal in my career and all the work that I've done thus far after that. So I always reference the Freedom Wall. I have to shout out Chuck Tingley. Mm.
Yeah.
Just mm-hmm. about anything Chuck Tingley touches, mm-hmm. I'm blown away by. So
talk a little bit about the Freedom Wall for, you know, reminding people of what that is.
So the Freedom Wall was a project that was led by the Buffalo AKG, then the Albright Knox Art Gallery, now Buffalo AKG, where it featured 28 civil rights and human rights leaders, particularly African-American, who've dedicated their life's work to justice, right, and human rights and things of that nature. There were four artists that were selected for that wall, for that project. It was John Baker, Chuck Tingley, Julia Bottoms, and myself. It was a multi-layered project and approach in the sense that the way that the Albright Knox rolled it out did not sit well with the community, in the way that they only had one artist. That artist, they did not seek out any advice or input from the community as they were moving into the community to really just push forward with the project without any consult from the people that live and share in that space. The AKG, they did something that was kind of paramount in the sense of, like, they halted, you know, and stood still in their tracks and just kind of rethought everything and really went into the community, had conversations. What did we do wrong? What did they, et cetera, et cetera. What would you like to see? And the project that you see now at Ferry in Michigan, the Ferry in Michigan for the Freedom Wall is like a prime example of artwork, public artwork done correctly with the least harm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Public artwork, wherever it is located, what are the steps to that? This was an interesting kind of went roundabout back to the right way. Why is it important to have public art reflect the space that it's in? And how does that really come about?
I think for me, going back to the Freedom Wall, that's the one piece that sticks out to me the most is I drive by it when I'm going to coach and then when I'm coming back home from coaching. And because there's a lot of faces and people on there, people that I looked up to and people that I tried to model my growth and development towards. Like, I used to always tell myself that the Montgomery bus boycotts were, what, 1955, 1965, when I was, but MLK was 23, 24, 25 years old. And then me, well, this was 5 or so years ago now. It's like, oh, I'm 24, 25. Now what am I doing to make my part of the world a better place? And that is a reminder as I'm going to go coach and mentor these young kids, like, all right, they're looking at me as someone who can be someone they can look up to as well. So hopefully I can be that voice to them. And that also leads into some of the poetry stuff that I do. So I think public art, it can be a thing where someone can look at it and be inspired by it, mm-hmm. Can be motivated by it, and also can just be calmed by it, get the sense of, like, all right, this is, art is nice to look at. It can calm you, it can affect all the emotions that you kind of have. So, and that's what the Freedom Wall kind of does for me. And that's what I think public art can do for people. It can elicit emotions that can move you. And that's what art is all about, trying to move people in different directions.
And you mentioned, you know, driving back and forth to coach soccer and seeing that art. So public art is in your life. You don't have to go to a museum or go somewhere else mm-hmm. outside. So you get that art in your life and what you're doing every day.
Yeah, that's one of the wonderful parts about it is that it's accessible, the accessibility to it. Like, you don't have to pay a fare, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
As long as you know where it is, you can interact and engage with it how you see fit.
Noah, are there pieces that come to mind even?
Yeah, there is one that in particular, you know, working at Just Buffalo downtown on Mohawk and Washington Street, close to the Central Library, a block from the Central Library, there's that beautiful, humongous flower mural by, is it Wheezy,
I think she goes by like Wheezy.
Yeah, Wheezy, like yeah. And yeah, it's yeah. just like, you know, you stand over there at the library, kind of where the garden is at the library, and you look at that mural, and it's kind of using the natural plants and flowers from Buffalo and just blowing it up.
Yeah.
And I think it's like that thing where you, it pauses you, like Dallas is saying, it pauses you and it gives you like, oh, this is kind of joyful.
Yeah. It's actually called Wildflowers for
it
Buffalo.
It is called Wildflowers. So, okay.
Good job. Good job. Idris, you mentioned something about accessibility. So it is free. This art is free for the public, but artists have to create this.
Yeah.
So, and I know that your work is valuable. Artists' work is valuable mm-hmm. and is not free. So can you explain different ways, or any of you explain different ways that these projects come about? Because I know you could have maybe a building owner that commissions a piece, or you might have somebody that says, we need something in this space, or something like the AKG wants to do a public art piece. So how do these things typically work for you?
I mean, for me particularly at this point, it's more of, you know, people get in contact with me, an institution, a company, an individual just gets in touch with me based off of, you know, work prior. In general, my response to that is the way that murals come about is several, because some people would just take it on to themselves and just say, I catch the bus here or whatever, mm-hmm. and it's like this place hasn't been touched or looked at in 15, 20 years. And some people would just take it upon themselves to do whatever, you
yeah.
know? And so that would be kind of classified as like graffiti, right?
Mm.
In
yep.
a sense, mm. because there's no permission per se. And then you have another level of where somebody in the community has a space or notices a space, and then they reach out to an entity or a company or whatever, just, you know, to kind of just get a consensus of like, hey, what do you think about this space?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think we should do? There's a we in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when it starts to become this we, then it starts to become a community kind of focused thing. And then you start to think about funding, right? Who's gonna pay for it? Who's gonna be the best artist suited for the space, for the project?
Mm-hmm.
So that's like the full gamut of like the more approved process,
mm-hmm.
you know?
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Group Chat. I'm joined by Idris Wajed, Noah Falk, and Dallas Taylor. We are talking about National Mural Day, but as you just mentioned, what is the difference between a mural and graffiti?
It's such a good question. I mean, I think of like, you guys know Truey, Don't Watch TV.
Yep.
And I think he does these, I mean, to me, it's like a blend of both. It's like a mural that's also graffiti. It's saying things. It's in spots where people are traveling. But I don't know the answer. But I think about that all the time, because I think, you know, like this culture of graffiti artists who are also like an underground community, maybe, and they're mm-hmm. talking to each other mm-hmm. and doing mm-hmm. things and speaking to each other through those pieces, right?
I feel like the difference between graffiti and like a mural per se, like, well, you can do murals using graffiti. So let's first start
yeah.
there. But I would say mural in this context would be more, again, permission-based, right? Agreement-based. Mm-hmm. And graffiti is, again, just the self-motivated initiative person who has the skill to do whatever it is. And what I think it comes along with graffiti is that it's more anonymous, and it's only for the graffiti artist who can recognize Noah's tag, who can recognize, you know, Dallas's tag. Whereas you and I walk through the space, we don't know who that person is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we don't know. Murals, on the other hand, you know exactly who the producer is and the why behind
mm-hmm.
it.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I did want to get to tagging. Because a lot of artists have become famous
yeah.
Because of their tags and become famous graffiti artists.
Yes.
Maybe end up doing a mural.
Oh, yeah. And being invited into like prime gallery spaces mm-hmm. eventually, you know, artists like Cause and Shepherd Fairey and,
right.
you know, they were all tags, like, you know, I mean, Futura.
Right.
Yeah.
The world class Futura. Yeah. He just yeah. did one on Elmwood
on
a couple
Elmwood,
of years
yeah.
ago with the AKG, right?
Yep.
Like,
mm-hmm.
this is a guy who's been doing it for 50 something years or whatever. How old are you? I think he's in his 60s now.
Yeah.
40 years or whatever. Started out just tagging.
It's just a way to use a different kind of platform. Just think about like Instagram. Like, you tag, this is my picture. My name is kind of tagged as this thing. If it's someone else's art, I tag them in it. But here it's like, all right, mm-hmm. this is a wall or a building or even a sidewalk. Like, this is my way of getting my name out there. Like, all right, I did this artwork. Mm-hmm. People are going to enjoy it. Some people might enjoy it. Let me know. Let me let them know who did it. And when it comes to like the difference between graffiti and like a mural, I would agree, like, permission, that might be a difference. Mm. I also think there's, to me, there's not much difference other than like the stigma that comes with graffiti. Like, oh, someone vandalize mm-hmm. this, but like it's a heart with a beautiful sentiment on it. I think that's a main difference. But other than that, I think it's another form of street art. I consider hopscotch on a sidewalk as street art. Like, it's yeah. another piece that will literally move you if you want to play the game right. Yeah. But it's you stop, you walk aside, like, oh, kids are still playing hopscotch on the sidewalk. Like, that's a good thing to know in 2025. Like, it's a stepping stone for a lot of art, but I think it's all art.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All of it is beautiful pieces of art that someone took the time to express themselves.
And you know, if you think about how children think too, they just see a blank canvas on the sidewalk, and it's kind of beautiful to just be walking and see yeah. how they decorated it, you know.
Even
it's,
your kids in the house, like, get a marker on the wall. Yeah. Well, this is
but in the house, you're like, wait a minute. Yeah. That's very interesting.
It's funny. Chuck Tingley's doing the silos on Saturday. He's the featured artist, and mm-hmm. we were talking about, and he just did that huge mural down Jamestown where yeah. like, he's so exhausted, like, how are you gonna do this, da, da, da. Because the inside of the silos have been graffitied so often, and they've been painting over them to kind of mm-hmm. keep them clean, but they gave us the permission again to have Chuck just paint on them. So mm-hmm. I think he's going to be painting on the inside of the silos.
Oh, wow.
For that space.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's
yeah.
something magical about that permission, and then like the allowance of that piece that Chuck's doing for somebody else to come and layer it or do something to it.
Yeah.
I think that's a part of it too, because it's an open space.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
It'll something. Morph. Yeah, it'll morph.
It'll morph, yeah. yeah. And Chuck's like, yeah.
He welcomes
it's cool.
that kind of thing.
Yeah.
For those kind of things, like
right.
in the silo, but.
Right.
So to that point,
yeah.
to that point about a public place, artists coming into the silo, creating art in the space that other graph artists kind of come into and will decide to add into the recipe, that's far different than murals, right? Though, like, what stops the invitation from an artist, you know, tagging or graffiti artist,
right.
graffitiing over, you know, a respected yeah. mural piece?
Yeah, the AKG public art platform. That's, I mean, what is the answer to that? And
well,
I guess
yeah.
it's scary.
Because yeah, you're talking about a mural covering up somebody else's work that they might have thought was somebody else's graffiti, even though it was graffiti, mm-hmm. it was art for somebody.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
So what about the reverse?
There's a line there.
Man, yeah. we're getting deep here. I wonder, would they ever consider looking at buildings, like something like the inside of the silo, and trying to uncover what might be under that paint, the graffiti that might be under there? That might be interesting.
I know it's so aged.
Yeah,
I
mean, yeah.
Stories, I'm sure they'd find something.
What are some of the other murals that you've done? And once you start doing murals, do you think differently about city spaces, or when you're, do you think differently about canvases when you're in your everyday life now?
Yeah, well, it changes. It certainly changed how I think of things in general, because scale matters, you know, and then observation. So scale, if I'm drawing on my lap and I can be private in my studio drafting and drawing. When you go out into the public space and you're on the block, you're on the street, right? You're, again, about this accessibility thing, like, you're accessible and people are able to then to observe you, and like, you have to be prepared for what that is.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? So now your process is out, nakedly outward, right? And showing in whatever it is, how long you're thinking, how long you're paying, whether you're deep into the practice or whatever, like, people are able to watch and observe, and you have to be able to prepare yourself to engage with that kind of, you know, activity. So in every project that I've done, what makes it most special is that the preparation before is that I get, again, permission from the community, you know, approval from the community, so to speak. And not everything's a home run. I can't say that everybody loves every single thing that goes up, but for me, I'll just use one example. There was a mural that I did over on Bailey and Amherst in like 2017. And in 2018, it was vandalized. Somebody put like wheat pasted posters on there with some derogatory, you know, statements and things of that nature. So I got a call. And then by the time I made it over there, it was already removed. And what was thrilling about that was, it was the perfect example of when you invite the community in, because the community was out. We had pink days. Like, they were out there rolling and priming with us, right? So to me, the most successful way to do a mural is when the transfer from artists to community. It's not mine anymore. I'm not standing over there guarding this thing like, hey, don't touch it, right? But the community, obviously, at that instance was like, oh, nah. Like, no, that's not cool.
This is ours.
This is ours.
Yeah.
And you can still see it. If you go by there, you'll see, you'll see some tags on there that somebody looks like somebody from their neighborhood just had some paint in the garage type of deal that was kind of close enough, you know? Like, this is all I got. I can't match it, right? But the gesture.
Yeah.
The gesture of the ownership of like, yeah, this is, I'm going to take care of this. That's when it's done right.
And that changes the story of the art in and of itself, right? Because now that part of it becomes the artwork and part of the story.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the nature of being in public space. I mean, you can have the intention, right? Yeah. You have intention of what you want it to mean, what you want it to do.
Yeah.
And no control, though.
Well, when we come back from the break, I want to talk a little bit more about this and talk about mental health in art and then roll that into our discussion on poetry. And how putting your feelings into a poem might just be the best form of free therapy you didn't know you needed. So don't go away. Group chat on BTPM NPR. We'll be right back. Thanks for checking out Group Chat, our new pop culture show on WBFO that talks about what you're talking about each week. Music, movies, food, technology, arts, culture, and more. And we want to know what's on your mind. Join the chat by dropping us an email at groupchat@wbfo.org. We welcome your questions, comments, and suggestions on what you want us to talk about. Thanks for joining us again on Group Chat. I'm your host, Bentley, and I'm joined by Idriss Wajed, Buffalo-based artist, educator, entrepreneur, whose creative works span visual art, jewelry design, music, and community engagement. Noah Falk, poet, culture worker, award-winning author, and literary director at Just Buffalo Literary Center. And Dallas Taylor, poet, writer, mentor, actor, director, and multimedia content editor at Buffalo Toronto Public Media. So we've been talking about National Mural Day that none of us knew existed. So this is we aim to serve here on Group Chat. So we got into great conversations about public art and talking about poetry and other art forms that you're all involved in. There is a mental health aspect of that, and there's a mental health aspect in art. And Idriss, at the end of the last segment, you mentioned being in front of people and creating art and how that does help with community. But does that also make you feel vulnerable because you're in a space where normally you're not being seen when you're creating?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There's been moments where I've been very anxious about beginning, starting, being out there, during, like just a lot of anxiety. You know, it's not like the murals are all around the corner from my house. Like I'm in different spaces all the time that I'm not familiar with. So unfamiliarity in period, you know, in general is going to cause some sort of angst, you know? So yeah, it's just, it comes along with the territory, with the vocation.
How does creating different art forms help with mental health? Does it cause anxiety? What's the range of emotions?
I think there's a little bit of both, especially in poetry, where it can be this form of catharsis, where you're expressing yourself, you're expressing the most vulnerable parts of yourself and being very honest in a public space. But then there's also some of those poems that you might do that come like a really deep spot within. Like, all right, after I do this, I need to walk away and like calm myself down. Or I know of poets who have completely retired poems. Like, I can't do that poem anymore because it triggers me so much. And I do a lot of slam poetry, and a lot of times, especially for the bigger slam poetry tournaments, there's usually someone on site that is like that mental health person that people can go to, whether before or after performance, like, all right, let's go some breath work, let's talk some stuff out, because some of this stuff can be triggering if you're coming from a very vulnerable and honest place within yourself.
Yeah.
So it can be that place where you can really kind of express yourself and do some healing with your mental health, but it can also be a space where it can affect your mental health greatly.
That's interesting. I did not know that there were mental health people behind the scenes.
Yeah, I've seen people break down during poems. Mm. And it's all sometimes not just from the content of the poem, but also just the environment of doing that in a public space. And especially in a high, intense environment, you may forget a line, forget a word, and it's a slam poetry tournament, you only have 3 minutes to do your poem. So now you take 5 seconds trying to run your mind back. What was that line again? And there's competition on the line. There's other poets in front of you. It can be a very intense space to be in. And I've seen poets kind of just break down, and it can be a rough spot. But the beauty of being in a poetry community is everyone has experienced that. It's like, all right, we get it. We understand. And like, no one's going to judge you any differently because you missed a line or you broke down during a poem.
Yeah.
And that can be a really healthy place in the arts too, where other artists understand, I can see what you were feeling here, and I can sense that, and I can understand where you're coming from with that.
Noah, you've been nodding.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about just the process of creating, and I was also just thinking about while Dallas was saying that, like, how healing and how healing reading and writing are. Like, I often think of the acts as meditative. You're alone when you're sort of writing, or at least I'm alone when I'm writing and reading, and you're sort of riffing on the imagination. You're pulling your imagination in different directions, and it makes me think about how that natural act of thinking blooms new thoughts, blooms new emotions.
Yeah.
And I think that's one thing that poetry does so well, is like, allows you to be in different spaces, be empathetic to different voices, be in the, when you're reading, different voices and different people from different generations, from hundreds of years ago, from different cultural communities, and like, mm-hmm. how that's, language brings us all together in those spaces.
Is there a feeling when you're creating art, I know you touched on this a little bit, Dallas, of getting it out, to get it out of you, but then also it goes somewhere. So does it feel therapeutic to get it out, even though then you may have to end up processing it in the next phase?
I think there's something to that, especially when it comes to the content that I'm writing. I started out writing a lot of love poems, and in a slam poetry environment, those really don't do well. But I've noticed every time that I've done one of those, it's, when I wrote it, it came from a very sincere, very vulnerable place. And then to do it in public, there's something very comforting about having another man come to me and say, hey, we don't talk like that. And I'm so grateful that I was here and heard that piece, because I feel the same way.
Yeah.
And that's what keeps me writing those pieces and what keeps me getting those pieces out.
Yeah.
It feels good to write it and express it out, but then to get the feedback like, hey, I felt the same thing and I know exactly where you're coming from. That is the aspect of when you get it out and knowing that someone somewhere is going to appreciate it.
Yeah.
There's not going to be an environment where everyone hears a poem like, oh, that was trash. I can't relate to any of that. There's someone in the room is going to relate to that poem. And I think that's part of where that mental health person comes in. If you're in a poetry environment, you're going to hear so many different stories. Something there is going to touch you, and you might sit with it for a little bit, and then you might need to talk to someone afterwards. But I think that's the beauty of art. It's there to touch you and move you and have you find something within yourself that relates to it, because we're all artists at the end of the day.
Yeah. Idris, are you hearing similarities or differences in terms of your art with the poets and the writers in the room?
Like, for me, I mean, the thing that occurred to me is like, there are certainly individuals that use writing, reading, whatever, but particularly like writing, because there's a force of the hand, you know, which is similar to drawing. It's the same force or push of the hand. And there are some people who need it as a form of release, right? Or muse, something that just, you know, the same way somebody will plop down and watch a Netflix series per se, right? Mm-hmm. There are some people who will spend just hours, I need to get this writing off, I need to get this hour. Like, that's their distraction, like their healthy distraction in a sense. Then you have some people, in my opinion, like me, who it's just, art is just my lifestyle. I never resorted to it to do a thing. Like, it's just always been who I am and what I do, you know? So it's like, people are like, oh, Dries, what do you, when you're not doing that, what do you do for fun? You see what I brought to the studio. I mean,
it is, it's a tablet, so you can physically write and draw.
Yes. So this is what I do for fun. I do it all the time. I know how to use it as a tool as well. Like, if there's something that, you know, that I need, that I'm mulling over, I think that's the benefit of some of these things that we're talking about too. Like, it allows you to process without actually you know, thinking of the thing. Because some people, that little thing that you're trying to take your mind off of can then find resolution when your mind is more relaxed, you know, to something. It's like problem solving.
Yeah.
I think it allows for creative solution finding, so to speak.
Noah, you mentioned writing and reading as a creative outlet. What is that process like for you? Where does it start?
It often starts with an image. I mean, I'm a notebook guy. I don't have my notebook today because I was on my bike. But
but you have notes.
I have notes.
You have physical notes.
I have
scratched
out
notes,
which may look like art, maybe not, more like trash. But no, I think it starts with an image. It starts with, for me, like if I'm drawn to an image and I return to that over and over again, like if I'm writing about a flower, which I often don't, but I do, I'm appreciating flowers more and more as I'm getting older. And like, if I keep seeing flowers or thinking about what flowers are doing, whether that's a color or a movement or a smell or all these things, and I keep going back to that, that's where it starts. Mm. And then it continues with trying to explore that, where, and I think it's all rooted in kind of the attention that's given to it. Like how close can I look at this thing, and how can I surprise myself in translating it back out? I think that's how I process.
How do you know when it's done?
I don't think you know. I never think a poem is actually finished, even if it's published. Like I look at it 10 years later, I'm like,
that's interesting.
I could rewrite that,
damn.
You know?
Yeah.
I could rewrite that. So I think it's like, you come to a point where you're like, you know it's done when you don't want to go back to it.
Mm.
Like I can't, you know?
And then the interesting thing to me about poetry too, is I know people that write poetry and never will say it out loud.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's a fear thing or actually, you know, they don't, that's not the step that they take with it. And then there's obviously Dallas, if we've been talking about performance poetry and you writing and saying those things out loud, but then there is the option for people to write poetry and have somebody else read it or say it out loud. So Noah, where do you fall in that?
It's a good question. I mean, I think I wouldn't necessarily call myself a performance poet, but I think when I read for other people, I would say it is a performance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that I often also read my stuff out loud to myself to hear the sound and the music of the language. I think that's a big part of editing for me, is if I get to a part where I'm like, okay, this thing feels good, it looks good, I read it out loud, and if it sounds good, then I'm like, okay, this also sounds good, and then I'll read it to somebody else or I'll share it with someone. But I've got to go through all those, like, it's got to feel good, it's got to look good, it's got to sound good, and then I can give it to my wife or a friend or something.
What if somebody reads a poem that you wrote and has a different interpretation of it? Is that something that you're okay with? Or I mean, is it something that makes you feel good because they felt a feeling?
It depends on what they read, because there's some pieces that me personally, I would write that is very direct. Like, this is what I'm talking about. There's no interpretation at all. Like, what I said is what I said. But then there's other pieces where it's more vague and more broad, where you can kind of draw different interpretations from what you read there. So it depends on what they're reading. For a lot of my pieces now, they are very direct. But I would say a lot of pieces that I wrote a long time ago are more so abstract and broad and vague, and those are the pieces where I started out writing and I wouldn't share it at all. Like, I've been writing for almost 10 years now, but there's poems that I wrote 10 years ago that have never seen the day of light. I've written them, and then once it was done in that moment, I've never looked back at it again. There's some that I have looked back at, and like you said, like, it's never quite finished. But then there's those times where I'm writing something as I'm processing it in real time. But then when I go back, my process for what I was processing in that moment has completed its process. But in the process of writing it, the process wasn't quite finished. So now I'm going back, oh wait, I got that wrong. Or I got this wrong. Or this is right, but this is wrong. So trying to teach myself now to process things almost to completion first before I start writing. Because then now, if I go back to it, it's not like, oh, this is, you process that all the way off.
The way off. In case you just joined us, you're listening to Group Chat. I'm your host, Bentley, here with Idris Wajed, Noah Falk, and Dallas Taylor. We've been talking about poetry and reading. And Noah, you are the creator, the producer, founder of the Silo City Reading Series. Can you talk a little bit about that and what it actually entails?
Yeah, so the Silo City Reading Series, which is put on by Just Buffalo Literary Center, we started it in 2013 as a poetry reading, and a lot of it was we didn't just want to have another, have it be just, hey, let's go see some poets, which there's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. But mostly when you have a poetry reading, the only people who are going to come are poets. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to kind of invite all the art forms in. We wanted to invite visual artists, dancers, filmmakers, but also have a musical component. So we always have live music in between the two poets. And the probably the most unique thing about it is it happens inside a 100-year-old, 130-foot-high grain silo on the edge of the Buffalo River. So
yeah,
it's cool, and it's been really fun. Idris did it back in 2017, 18?
I feel like 18-ish, yeah, yeah, 18, 19.
And he did some live painting, and yeah, it was like so cool. It's also just community. Like, it's yeah, like the people who come out and support it and who sort of appreciate art on all scales, kind of like what we're talking about, like, you know, the visual arts, the poetic arts, the musical component. I mean, it's really kind of wild too.
Do you feel the history of the space when you're in that space? Obviously, there's a history, but it's been transformed in different ways.
For me, stepping in that space, I've been there a few times, you know, along with the series.
Mm-hmm.
And it provokes imagination. That's what it just is going to provoke imagination, because our perspective of what we know as life today is what's informing us as we walk into the space. But you can't walk into the space without wondering 100 years ago, the people that actually were in this space working with, like, the materials and the products and things that moved and shifted, and the smells. Like, for me, that's what I investigate when I walked in there. I'm just like, my imagination was just like completely like pricked, like, wow. But you can never grasp it, though. That's the thing.
Mm.
You will never be able to hold it in your hand. You can touch the wall, but you can never, the experience, you can't put on or hold.
Does it just look like one big blank canvas for you when you see those walls?
Well, 100-foot wall, mind you. Like, I mean, these things are incredibly high, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it's certainly blank canvas. But I don't think my work, again, unless invited into the space to do it, I would never. I just wouldn't. That's just not me.
Yeah. That's interesting, that this invited permission.
Yeah. I mean, it's been tagged. I mean, I'm sure people, even before Rick Smith bought the silos, people grew up in there messing around, doing all kinds of things you shouldn't be doing in there. But it feels almost haunted in a way. But like, there's a good haunt, because like the community comes in and you're putting art in the middle of it and poetry in the middle of it, and then you have, it just feels good. There's something about on the cut of that river too, like even before the silos, the indigenous cultures that were there, like all that magic lives there.
Yeah.
Like, and you can feel it. It's like,
I love that.
Eerie in a good way, you know?
Well, there's so many aspects and so many things that go on during these events. We're going to dive a little bit more into music as part of all of your creative processes and, you know, how music can affect your mood and creativity. So that's coming up next on Group Chat on BTPM NPR. We'll be right back. Thanks for checking out Group Chat, our new pop culture show on WBFO that talks about what you're talking about each week. Music, movies, food, technology, arts, culture, and more. And we want to know what's on your mind. Join the chat by dropping us an email at groupchat@wbfo.org. We welcome your questions, comments, and suggestions on what you want us to talk about. Welcome back to Group Chat. I'm your host, Bentley, here with my guests, Idris Wajed, Buffalo-based artist, educator, entrepreneur, whose creative works span visual art, jewelry design, music, and community engagement. Noah Falk, poet, culture worker, award-winning author, and literary director at Just Buffalo Literary Center. And Dallas Taylor, poet, writer, mentor, actor, director, and multimedia content editor at Buffalo Toronto Public Media. So we've been talking about all different art forms, especially because we all learned recently that Saturday is National Mural Day. So Idris was very excited to hear about that.
Delighted.
Delighted. So we've been talking about different art forms poetry, visual art, and it seems to me that music has found its way into all of this.
Always.
And Idris, your artwork, many times you do paint to music.
Painting to music for me is like, I've come up with my own marks and notation system, mm-hmm. so to speak, and it developed because there was a time where I was a performing artist. I was a hip hop artist, mm-hmm. a rapper, so a poet, a street poet, mm-hmm. whatever you want to. So I was good at putting words together.
Yeah.
And, you know, rapping over music and such. And there came a point where I had to just choose between chasing this dream and illusion versus being a husband and a dad and getting grounded and taking care of my family. So in doing that, I chose the latter, and I didn't make any music for a long time. Just out of bitterness and out of hurt, mm-hmm. out of feeling like failure, things of that nature. But knowing I made the right choice to be, to honor, you know, my obligation as a father and as a husband. And so what I did was I just returned back to what was there first and foremost before anything, which was art. It's always been in my life. And I was just trying to figure out a way for me to regain that experience of what it felt like being on a microphone, being on stage, sitting down writing to a beat. And then I just merged what I was already doing, which was the art. And so the art began to be my music production, you know, where I use text in my artwork still, you know, from lyrics and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So fortunately enough, I was able to investigate myself and practice and just play around, and I landed on the style. So it was a perfect marriage for me. When we address those things that are knocking on our door, like Noah was talking about, like a flower grabs his attention and it keeps grabbing his attention, he has the choice to, like, what the heck is wrong with flowers? Like, flowers are stupid. Like, he has the choice to say yeah. that, or he has the ability to be like, why am I attracted to the flower?
Yeah.
So it's the same thing with, like, the things that kind of knock on our door, mm-hmm. right? Like, investigate them, you know? Baking, jewelry making, whatever it is, mm-hmm. investigate those things. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we owe it to ourselves.
I think your gifts will find you and find ways to get your attention and have you express them. Like, go back to James Earl Jones and him when he was younger having, like, the stuttering problem. Mm-hmm. And yeah. now he's known as one of the greatest orators that we've ever had existed. Right. Like, your gifts just have a way of finding you. Like, all right, you're not getting away from this. Like, this yeah. is something that you have, and, like, you need to get this out. Yeah. So, like you were saying, like, it'll knock on your door multiple times. Like, hey, I'm here, just waiting for you to embrace me and let me out.
But is it obligatory to accept the invitation, like, from the muse or from the gift, though?
You know?
Like, is it an obligation?
I think it depends on what you use the gift for. Like, if you want to use it to inspire and move people, then I think there is a little bit of a obligation as an artist to accept it. But if you just want to take, like, oh, I'm just good at this and I'm doing it for money or for fame and stuff like that, things that are more selfish in a way.
Yeah.
I think it's, you don't have to take it, but there's a reason that you take it. And whatever that reason is that person's prerogative. Shout out to Bobby Brown. but, like, what they want to do with it is, it depends on if it's their thing.
Noah, for you, you curate these... Mm-hmm. The people and experiences and the artists that everybody is talking about. Is there an obligation? Do you feel an obligation to get the work that these people are doing out to the audience?
I mean, I think I've always approached it as, like, how can this be the best experience of that you can have on a Saturday night with all these kind of art forms coming together?
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are speaking to each other and some are way far away from each other. But I think it's like trusting the artists and giving them space to be artists.
Yeah.
In front of an audience. And I can't think of one that wasn't, like, didn't give me goosebumps in some respect.
What music do you remember being the music that maybe started to shape you, or maybe that you started to see as an early art form?
I recently wrote a quick poem on this a week ago when I was younger. In our neighborhood on Northampton Street, I had three younger siblings at the time, and then the house next door had about five kids around our age. But then the house next door was a woman named Miss May. Every summer, like, every morning, she would be outside on the porch listening to AM 1400 Solid Gold Soul, So every time we're playing outside, I'm hearing Marvin Gaye, I'm hearing The Temptations, I'm hearing Aretha Franklin.
Oh my gosh.
At like 9, 10, 11 years old.
Yeah.
So I guess now people say I'm an old soul, mm-hmm. but that was the music that I was listening to at a younger age. So now that influences a lot of what I listen to today. Like, I don't listen to a lot of contemporary music,
mm-hmm.
and it's a lot of old school mm-hmm. stuff, like the Marvin Gaye, Temptations. A lot
That's
of Stevie
cool.
Wonder. Stevie Wonder is my favorite artist of all time. I think he's the greatest in any category you want to talk about.
I agree.
Vocal, production, all of it. He's the best.
And you associate it to a very specific memory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I always remember Miss May.
See?
Miss May. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, how many memories do you have of that time, that age in your life, you remember specifically the music and the person's name?
Yeah.
You know?
Music is magical like that, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it can transport us.
Mm-hmm.
Transport you to the porch, to the street,
mm-hmm.
right? To the park, wherever. Like, and that's what I love about music the most. Without even leaving your seat, you can be transported emotionally as well, like whether memory or emotion.
Yeah.
Like for me, there's songs that I can play at this moment right now, and the feeling is exactly the same each and every time. It's either mm-hmm. going to make me cry
mm-hmm.
or make me dance or make me, you know, reminisce about an event or whatever. Like, it's like indelibly marked somewhere in my body, like to cause a response, you know?
Do you have a song in your head right now?
Which one? The happy one or the ones that make me cry?
I want to cry and a happy.
I would say Jamaica Funk by Tom Brown is like a song that takes me back to Drexel Road, early 80s at my grandmother's house where I spent the summer all the time. And WBOK had Freddie Patrick on the radio at the time. And every household from the time I'm walking up Fillmore to whatever, like whatever's on WBOK at the time was blasting through everybody's
That's
window.
Cool.
You know what I mean? Like, so that Jamaica Funk is that one that takes me back to that. And the one that makes me cry in the happy way, not sad way, is Optimistic by Sounds of Blackness.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can win as long as you keep chills. Your head to the sky. It brings me tearful joy every time.
That's a great song.
Putting yourself in that space when you hear certain music in your creative lives,
mm-hmm.
do you put certain music on to be able to be brought to certain spaces, or does the music start first?
Mm.
Or do you know the piece that you want to work on, so then you put on certain music, or do you let... How does it work? Which comes first?
Yeah, it toggles.
Yeah.
It toggles. Like, sometimes I wake up in the morning. I hope you all experience. I hope it's not just unique to me. But sometimes I just wake up in the morning and a song is on repeat in my head.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I didn't even play this song before.
Yeah.
Like
right.
Why? Yeah. You know? And so sometimes
that's cool.
Those are just kind of restart my day, and I just take note of those.
Yeah.
Right? I just kind of take note or what have you. Other times it's certainly more deliberate, though. Like, it's just particular groups that I love. The catalog of just music is continuing to just explode, right? So I'm never going to be able to put my hand on every single song.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so I selfishly chase all of those songs, right? I can do an entire album.
You should.
You know what I mean? Like, I can grab an album and just go song for song. Off the Wall, Michael Jackson, right? Just go all the way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I did the Michael Jackson one at the silo.
Oh, the silo,
was
that Michael Jackson?
Yeah,
oh,
Baby Be Mine was the name of the song. It was Baby Be Mine was the name of that song. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think we need a repeat.
Gotta go back to that. Go back to that. Yeah.
I think we need a playback on that.
That would be cool.
And then I know we talk about memories. How does music heal along with the other art forms? Are there healing components to music? Is it something like poetry where even if the memories are bad, does it still get it out? Does that help you to process it? They're calming effects.
I think so. For me, I listen to a lot of gospel and worship music, and that puts me in a space where I can, if I'm having a bad day, it reminds me that you have much more to live for, much more to be happy about and joyful about, so continue to live your life in a positive way.
Yeah.
But the music influence in the art, I think I have those same moments we wake up, like, why is Alicia Keys No One in my head? Like, I've not listened to Alicia Keys in a while. Why is this in my head? But then there's other times where I'll be listening to a song and I'll hear a line and I was like, I like that line. Let me see if I can create something based off that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one poem I wrote was based on a line from a J.P. Sachs song. And the line was, If Love Ends, is that not what we call it anymore? It's like there's something poetic in there. Like, how can I flip this and make this happen? Another poem where it's just all Stevie Wonder songs. Because one night I was listening to Stevie Wonder and heard the line, "You can feel it all over. You can feel it all over.
Sir Duke.
Yeah, Sir Duke. Yeah. And I was listening to that and like, let me use that to create something.
That's awesome.
Did you notice a lot of poets will start a poem off with a song? And it's most of the time for me, it's because I've created this while listening to this song. Or the other way, I created this and when it was finished, oh, this reminds me of this song, and it kind of takes you back that way.
Yeah. Maybe as we were talking about not being able to escape your calling, maybe these songs are being sent to you overnight when you wake up. Listen to me getting deep there, telling you what you need to be doing.
That's good.
I subscribe to that. Yeah. I can subscribe to that.
The next song you wake up to, you never know. So I know there's upcoming events with Silo City Reading Series that kicks off June 28th. What is everybody doing this weekend? Idris, do you have anything coming up? Dallas, like, so what are you doing this weekend and what do you have going on that you would like to tell people about? We'll start, who do we want to start with? We'll start with Noah, because Idris looks like he's trying to remember.
He actually has something.
He's trying to think. I'm going to give him a minute.
Well, we are doing the Silo City Reading Series on Saturday, June 28th with poet Graham Faust, poet Amy Dieth, musical guest from New York City, Allegra Krieger, and painter Chuck Tingley, who will, I guess we're going to be celebrating National Mural Day.
Yeah, Mural Day.
I'll have to let him know that that's happening. That's going to take up my whole day. That's my whole day. Yeah, I'm excited for it.
I mean, I can understand why.
Yeah.
Dallas, how about you?
Nothing coming up for me this weekend, although every Tuesday I try to go to the Empty Coffee Cup Cafe on Oak Grove. They have an open mic there from 6 to 9. A lot of legendary local poets have been brought up there. Brandon Williamson, 10,000. Bianca L. Period McGraw, like that's Vanetta T. Rose. Shout out to Vanetta. I love going there every Tuesday to just be with the community, just express yourself. So every Tuesday that happens. But this weekend, I'm taking a break. Our coaching season is over, and I get to take a break from not yelling at the kids, but
mentoring.
Waking
mentoring.
Up early mentoring. To chase them around.
Yeah, chase the ball around. Yeah.
Glad you get a little bit of a break, but thank you for telling us about the Tuesday night series. Idris?
I have nothing. I really don't. I mean, I have a lot of projects that I'm, you know, happily, you know, moving towards as far as like drafting ideas. Yeah. And so that's what's going to take all of my weekend is just time to process and just continue drawing. Like I have 7 day weeks. Like I don't. Mm-hmm.
You don't get a weekend.
No. I stopped subscribing to weekends a long time ago once my career became solely entrepreneurially based on the arts. Mm. Like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There isn't a separation.
No. And I don't mind. I don't mind. Yeah, I really don't mind.
And it's definitely not 9 to 5 and Monday through Friday.
Nope. Not at all. It's 10 to 10 some days, you know.
Well, we're thankful for you because then we get to experience your art. So we're thankful that you have chosen that. I'm going to actually be in Toronto because Toronto Pride is this coming week and weekend, and we are part of the parade on Sunday. But I'm going to go up early on Saturday to hang out in Toronto on Saturday. And I always have to get to things early, so I'm like, I'm just going to get everywhere early Sunday morning, so I don't have to worry about
Sunday.
It's on Sunday. Okay, cool. There's festivities going on all weekend, but the parade is on Sunday. So yeah, that'll be my weekend. You guys have been inspiring me for the playlist I'm going to listen to on the way to Toronto. So that wraps up today's episode of Group Chat for now. If you want to continue the conversation, make sure you follow us on Instagram and Twitter at BTPMNPR. Also, check us out on the video podcast on Buffalo Toronto Public Media's YouTube channel. If you love public media, you like shows like this, help to protect it. Informational emails, things like that, everything you need to know to stay up to date and who to contact, you can just visit protectmypublicmedia.org to learn more and take action. I'd like to thank my guest, Idris Wajed, Noah Falk, and Dallas Taylor. I'm your host, Bentley. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.